Last call!
Not so fast, bartender. I think I'll have one more.
Time for one more round of sports talk.
That's what I'm talking about. Sports!
It's Last Call with Joe George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Another!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe George.
Welcome in to Last Call here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George, AJ, hanging out with you for the next hour. Happy four-year anniversary to the Killer Bees and the show that they had today. Also, number one rule of today's show, don't be sensitive. Let's talk some Houston sports. We're talking Astros. We're talking Rockets. We're talking Hatgate 2025. All the important things that are going on. And there's also a lot of stupid things that are happening in sports that are happening besides Hatgate that are happening outside of Houston. Some of them connect to your local teams. We'll talk about realignment and expansion in Major League Baseball and all those things throughout the show. But we'll start today's show off with the Houston Astros. So they lose 2 out of 3 this weekend to the Orioles. 7-0 on Friday. They win 5-4 on Saturday, which was a bizarre game, to say the least. Very not well-executed baseball in the extra innings, honestly, by either team. And the Astros find a way to win that one. And then they lose 12-0 yesterday. And it could have been a lot worse, obviously, without Jesus Sanchez. And on Friday, they were getting perfect gamed. That's not a way to say it, but there was a perfect game being thrown against them for most of it until Urias broke it up himself against his former team. So, not a great weekend for the Houston Astros in terms of success on the field. To pile on with that, then you have Christian Javier, who apparently is with the team currently as they're in action in Detroit. He did fly out with the team today. He was under the weather. Very concerning still, what we saw from Christian Javier. I don't want to... It's honestly my biggest thing from this weekend with the Astros, besides the offense struggling and not putting up runs in two games against the Orioles, who haven't been great this year, obviously, who sold at the deadline. My number one thing with Christian Javier is, did the bug that he had really drop his velocity on his fastball down to 90? Or is it something else? And we'll find out in the next start, and hopefully it really was just, you know, we all get it. The body aches or whatever, you just don't feel like yourself, you're sluggish, all of that stuff. I can't imagine trying to throw a baseball 93 miles an hour and feel that way. Well, first of all, then you probably shouldn't have played. I know that puts you in a bind, but you have Chaz McCormick in the bullpen, so like you're fine. But you probably didn't need to be out there, to be honest, if you were feeling that sluggish or whatever was causing the velocity on his fastball to drop that much. But coming off of Tommy John and being out for as long as he was, and still having that performance, it raises your eyebrow. It's not a red flag. It's not panic button or anything like that. But it raises your eyebrow. Just like, what's really happening here? And then we find out he's sick. So hopefully, it really is just that. So the next start, to me, is going to be so important for Christian Javier. Because the Astros sent out their book report today on all the Astros injuries that are going on. They mentioned Lance McCullers. They mentioned JP France. Dana Brown's been talking about these guys on the flagship with different timetables that Lance McCullers' next start could be with the Astros. Luis Garcia, JP France, not too much farther behind. So if you did have an injury, knock on wood that you don't, you can probably survive it. Yes. But it's still not great when I said last week, at this moment, I would still feel most confident in game 3 of a playoff series, whether it's in the wild card round, the DS, CS, or World Series. I still, gut feeling, would want Christian Javier to be the guy that gets the ball in game 3 of a playoff series because of what he's done in the past, being part of a no-hitter. We know what stuff he has. In his first start back from Tommy John, he showed us a new wrinkle. He added a third pitch that he used more than he'd ever used in his entire career. So the first start was promising. The second start's obviously not good. And now we just all cross our fingers and hope for the best because one of the other guys potentially that you were hoping to get back that, you know, Jeremy Branham has, I mean, he picks weird ones, man. Like, that's my guy. But Will Levis and then Brandon Walter. Now, Brandon Walter's way more deserved than Will Levis, the love, okay? I don't give Jerry much grief about that one because I think the Walter love is well-deserved for the way he's pitched this year, but he has elbow pain and it's being shut down. So at this point, and we all have to assume that he's not going to pitch for the Houston Astros again in 2025. The good news health-wise is that Yordan Alvarez is going to start rehabbing games. He's going to play in a game tomorrow, have a day off, and then play back-to-back games, and they'll go from there. Potentially even, could he be in the lineup as early as this weekend? Yes. I think it's more likely he's in the lineup starting next week, and they give him a couple days off, get back to Houston, really make sure everything's okay. Because that's what's important with Yordan. It's just make sure everything's actually okay this time. Because this rehab process has been so bumpy. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, it feels like. It was that he was in Houston at Daikin Park hitting a home run into the outfield during batting practice and then saying his hand hurt the next day. So these next 4 days of anything that can happen with the Houston Astros, more than what happens in the Tiger series, more than what happens with your rotation, the most important thing over the next 4 days is whatever happens with Yordan Alvarez. Because if you want to be a legit World Series contender this year, you need that guy. Like, you need him. Even if he's – I saw Chandler Rome's on his podcast talk about it might take him some time to get back into the swing of things. Absolutely. But you have Jesus Sanchez, who can't hit. You have Cam Smith, who can't really hit right now. So one of those guys is your right fielder. And then Yordan's your DH, Altuve's in left. And Urias is your second baseman or Dubon. And even though your right field is struggling – whatever Yordan brings to you at the plate is better as a DH than anything else you have right now on the roster. Because they're clearly not going to be going with Caratini and Diaz all the time in the lineup. You have to bring up a third catcher, which in theory, I guess they could in 13, 14 days when September 1st call-ups happen. But that's the most important storyline for me with the Houston Astros right now. And it's not particularly close. Yes, the offense is struggling. Yes, you have injuries and sickness and all these different things going around. But whatever happens with Yordan Alvarez in these next 4 days, that to me is where it feels like we can feel more confident about where the Astros season is heading. Because while I've maintained that they are a legitimate World Series contender as they stand right now because of what's happening in the American League around them, it does make it more realistic if Yordan's part of this team. So overall, like, things aren't great. They could be worse, AJ, I guess is the way to put it, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the situation could be worse, but I mean, the Astros are trying to get things right, most definitely.
Text line here from the 979. The bees hurt Joe's feeling and the bees hurt their own. Me and the bees are fine now. We hashed it out before the show, but we're fine now. The only hurt feelings here for me are, honestly, my eyeballs for having to watch the Astros this weekend. It was a tough watch.
Yeah,
and we're in preseason game, too. I'm done with football. Preseason.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it, what we learned, because at least we saw the starters a little bit.
Right.
But AJ, I'm done. I am so ready for this coming weekend.
Yeah,
college. It's still not totally real football because it's week zero.
Mm-hmm.
But like the fact that there will at least be some level of football on our televisions that actually matters.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
I know, right?
Because it has been a grind of an offseason, it feels like. This year, for whatever reason, I don't know if with my life has changed so much this offseason. My schedule has changed. I've gone from a 12-3 show to no show to back on the air. And like so much has happened. I'm just like, I feel like I've been dying for football to get back. And we're here. It's finally time for football to actually show up. The other thing to me, just with the Astros, just a little bit more on the lineup itself. Again, while Yordan Alvarez is overall more important, for the Astros, like, you want to hold off the Mariners as much as you can, and they have to, thanks to the Mets a little bit here. They do need to get the offense going pretty quickly here. And this is a situation where I think when I look at the Astros right now, it's not fair to blame it on Yordan not being out there. It's not fair to just look at Cam Smith or just look at Jesus Sanchez. It is just a collective level of not great right now by the Houston Astros. And it's not a, you know, team-wide worry because you did just come off taking 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox, but you've had just a lot of clunkers recently. I mean, you look at their last 3 losses. The Astros have lost 14-1, 7-0, and 12-0. So they're either winning or they're losing by a large margin. And I don't know what that means necessarily. To me, it looks like it's just an extreme. But if you're going to lose, can you make them a little more competitive too? That's a small ask. I feel like we're not asking for a lot in this situation. Just, you know, make it so when we're all watching the game at the end, it's I'd rather be having discussions about Joe Espada and the decisions that he's making at the back end of the bullpen without Josh Hader, who the update on him from Dana Brown and Joe Espada and everyone was that he's going to be shut down for a handful of weeks. He's not going to throw. And we talked about this on Friday. And then potentially something else happens. Like he potentially pitches again this season. I was thinking about it more this weekend because the news kind of came out right as we were getting on the air on Friday. So the more I thought about it, the more I'm willing to just kind of stand my ground that we're not going to see him. And then Dana Brown talked about on Sunday on his interview with Robert Ford. He mentioned the how much time Josh Hader has left in his contract, that there are still 3 more years left on this thing for him. I don't think that was a full, like, show his hand moment for Dana Brown, but I think he did tip his hand a little bit that because, and I think it's the right decision that because of the, we think about the long-term future of the Houston Astros versus the short-term importance of this season, it's better to have Josh Hader healthy and ready to go for the next 3 years versus this postseason run. And as much as that sucks that you wouldn't have him as you're trying to win a World Series this year, this team, while you know Tucker goes and Bregman goes and Fromber will be gone, and they're still going to compete for the playoffs next year. They're still going to probably be the best team in the West. They're probably still going to be one of the best teams in the American League. So as long as Josh Hader's back next year, that to me is the big picture part of this season, of this injury in itself, that it is hard to factor in or to disagree with. And there will be fans that don't agree with me on this, that they want to see Josh Hader out there no matter what, and he should battle through it in their mind. I don't agree. I think it's better for his long-term health to maintain what's going on for his career, not just for this season. All right, we'll take a break here when we get back. What did we learn from the Texans preseason game? Only a couple possessions here. From the offense and the defense, but there were some positives and things that we saw. And plus, John Metchie got traded as well. We'll get to all that next here on Last Call on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to Last Call with Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe George.
All right, Spencer Arrighetti's got the bases loaded here with no outs in the second, so not the best start. I was trying to see if it went out of play or not. Jesus Sanchez bounced it off the wall, took a weird bounce. So they're in some danger right now. So you need Spencer Arrighetti figured out a little bit. He hasn't looked great so far. Some of that's to be expected, I think, with his time off, with the injury and everything. But I think that it's going to be interesting to see how he fills out his spot in the rotation because, to me, if you were going to say, like, Jason Alexander and Spencer Arrighetti and Christian Javier, Alexander's the easy one to send up. He's looked really good. I don't know what the Astros are going to do when they start getting these guys back. They need to keep him in the minors as long as possible. Specifically, Luis Garcia, and I don't think J.P. France should be factoring at all. I think people are kind of being courteous when you hear from, like, he could be an option for the Astros. I don't personally view him that way. So it's going to be really interesting to see. And Arrighetti's got to get out of this one because he's been on the struggle bus just since he came back up to the Astros. And I think it's fair to say we all would have expected him to be just a little bit better. All right, so the Texans are 2 preseason games in. The starters played 2 possessions each. So we saw CJ. We saw Nico. We saw most of the new offensive line. It wasn't totally what it's going to look like in week 1, saw the defense out there. You know, we saw, I mean, my number one biggest takeaway is what you expect is Will Anderson's Derek Stingley Jr. awesome. Like while Anderson had a penalty on the play that Derek Stingley Jr. got the interception from Bryce Young, which was a holding, which whatever. But he got after the, you know, he got a great stop on the next play on a running play, was right in the backfield. Derek Stingley got a big pass breakup on that one. So he gets what could have been a turnover, then a pass breakup to end that drive. So the defense just came out and they're humming. Both possessions, the second defensive possession, we see Azeez Al-Shaair nearly kill Bryce Young, pull off just enough, hit him in the chest. Spencer Arrighetti got out of it with double play. Nice job. So please don't get suspended before the season starts, Aziz, is probably the nicest way to put it. And like, while I've been really impressed with the linebacker room in its entirety, I think Nick Caserio has done a really good job of adding depth to replace Christian Harris because he's such an unknown on this roster. But Henry To'o To'o, what you've got from some of these guys, EJ Speed in preseason game number one was all over the place. You still don't want to lose Aziz. I mean, the Texans defense, like that to me is the one part of the season last year where it was visibly different with and without him on the field. And so it's nice to see him not hit Bryce Young in the head. At the same time, got to be a little more careful. Right, AJ?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's the defensive catalyst in terms of what, like, you know, amplifying everyone up to really just bring the energy. So you want him on the field, but yeah, you want to tone it down a little bit too. But yeah, definitely.
And then we saw Will Anderson get some really nice pressure at the end of that drive as well. And Mario Edwards Jr., I believe it was, got the sack. So we saw what was to be expected, right?
Right. Mm.
Are the Carolina Panthers going to be good this year? I don't think so. I mean, they turned it on. You know, after, you know, Bryce Young got benched last year. He came back. He was much better. And I don't have, like, high expectations for them. But so you kind of did what you were supposed to do from a defensive perspective in this game.
Right, for sure. Yeah, I think the Panthers, they'll probably be, like, around 7-10. Maybe you're 8-9, something like that. That's improvement for them, though. So, you know.
Yeah. That's a big improvement for them.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're like, picking in, like, the late, you know, top 10.
Right.
You know, like, that's why I think the 7th pick last year got you, like, the 8th pick in the draft. So, That feels about right for where they could be at this season. They're obviously not going to be towards, not obviously, but I don't think they're going to be towards the bottom of the NFL. Like, the New Orleans Saints are clearly going to be.
Yeah, the worst team.
Yeah. It's not, I don't even know if it's going to be competitive.
Me either, yeah.
I mean, I was looking through some of the week-by-week lines on ESPN Bet, and, I mean, you're seeing them constantly 7-point dogs in games. I mean, look, like, the Bears won 7 games last year, and they added Ben Johnson, and they've fixed some things. But they're 7.5-point favorites. That's a team that didn't make the playoffs last year.
Right.
And they're 7.5-point favorites against New Orleans Saints right now, like late in the season, which means that number potentially is only going to get bigger as health happens. And who knows who the Saints' starting quarterback is going to be. But the Panthers will not be the worst team in the NFL is the point of all of that. They'll be close. They might be close, but they won't be the worst. So the defense was really positive in this one. Jalen Noel had a really nice return before the offense came back on for that second drive. It was called back before a penalty. So that's interesting because while I think Braxton Berrios is going to make this roster, I heard Sean talking about this with Dell earlier, and we'll get to the John Metchie stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't really care as much about, you know, wide receivers 5, 6, 7, how many they're going to keep. It's more, I think they tell us that based on the roster construction, and they felt the need to not have Metchie on this roster. And I think part of that is because you have Noel, you have Berrios that can return kicks. You have some different guys that can be used in different areas. So that was a positive for him too, where while I would like Berrios to, I kind of lean towards him as the veteran for the kick return spot. With the rule changes again this year, they're trying their hardest to make the kick return matter. So whoever's back there should have some level of impact on this team. I don't know. I'm curious to see what the roster looks like, but like, I'm not going to sit here and break it down for you because I don't think people really know like who's going to, if they're going to keep 7 or 5 or all those different things. Let's talk about the offense here. So CJ Stroud, the first drive, the Texans offense doesn't do much. It's clean overall, which is good, I guess. He misses Nico Collins on a deep ball, which I think he thought Nico was going to go to the right towards the sideline. He doesn't. That's preseason stuff that you're missing out on. And then we see the second drive where the Texans are much, much better. They're effective on first downs. You saw solid running from Nick Chubb, which is something that a lot of, you know, throughout camp, people have been talking about what you've been seeing from Nick Chubb. And I think it was always kind of stating the obvious, but it's also a hope and a wish that Nick Chubb, once you put pads on and it's full speed and he really can use his legs and he can really drop his shoulder into people, that it would be better than it's looked in camp, and it did come that way.
Yeah, for sure. He was breaking tackles and everything too.
Like, yeah. I mean, so like that's very good because Aaron Wilson suggested that, like, it doesn't seem particularly clear that Joe Mixon's going to be available anytime soon, that rehab hasn't been going great for him. And, you know, Woody Marks later in the game looked really good, honestly. Like, that could be a steal of a draft pick. The running back position is always weird because it's so devalued now in the NFL that like real talent slides in the draft. So even though Woody Marks isn't, you know, one of your first two-round picks or anything like that. He's someone that could make an immediate impact on this roster. And without Joe Mixon or with Joe Mixon, I feel like you do need him to do that. Someone who can catch the ball out of the backfield, a change of pace back, especially with Nick Chubb. So
yeah, for sure. If he would have like a Bucky Irvin type of impact, that would be so ideal and so perfect for the Texans, you know.
I mean, that's a great comp, actually. Like, if he could be the Bucky Irvin to what, you know, Nick Chubb is for Rashad White, right, who had a lot of promise after his rookie year, but slowed down a little bit. And the Buccaneers had a really good 1-2 punch with those guys. Now, it feels like going into year three or year two for Bucky, year three for White, that Bucky Irvin's going to end up being just the dude.
Right.
That's almost the perfect situation for the Texans, honestly, is that while Joe Mixon's getting healthy, and even when he does, that Woody Marks forces himself to be a consistent part of this roster. And then when you go into next season, the veteran guys are the ones who, okay, they're the step back. They're the short yardage back. Woody's the guy. Like, that would almost be best case scenario.
For sure.
Honestly, for the Texans. But we saw CJ pass the ball around. I mean, it was going all over the place. We saw Higgins, what he can do. We saw Christian Kirk getting involved. And then, of course, you have the touchdown pass to Nico Collins. So, all in all, it's largely positive stuff from the Texans. Again, it's a preseason game. It doesn't totally matter. I think it makes it even worse that it's the Panthers, because your twos are probably better than their ones. But at the end of the day, you ask for clean football, you ask for your defense to be solid, and they check those boxes in a preseason game.
Right, that, and then also just getting off the field healthy. That's the main important things from the preseason.
100%, 100%. And then the Texans surprise us a little bit. So they trade John Mechie in a 2026 sixth-round pick to the Philadelphia Eagles for Harris Bryant, the tight end, and a 2026 fifth-round pick, which I believe was their own. So they're really just kind of reestablishing their own draft capital here. To me, this means a couple things. John Mechie wasn't going to make the roster, and you did the best you could to get an asset for him in return. And that asset is important, because while Dalton Schultz and Cade Stover are the clear top two guys, I don't think there was particularly close a third tight end on this roster. And your wide receiver 6, 7, 8 is way less valuable on this team than your third tight end, because Dalton Schultz has had injury history. Cade Stover is still like a puppy, basically, in terms of playing the tight end position. He's played so little of it in his career that while, like, I'm kind of all in on Cade Stover's stock from what we're hearing out of training camp, I think I told you guys this last week, he's like my last pick, basically, in every fantasy football draft. I'm just trying to stash up on him. Also, now I feel like I can really do fantasy drafts. I had one before this. I was very annoyed. But that was outside of Dynasty. But now, like, the real drafts can begin, because I don't think we're going to see the starters in the third preseason game.
Nah.
I would be surprised. I guess we could for a possession if they wanted to, or maybe two again. But I'd be a little surprised if we saw that from the Texans. But this is a fine trade for the Houston Texans. It doesn't change like your Super Bowl contendership, or it's a good depth piece. And there's no one better to tell you that than the head coach of the Houston Texans. Here is D'Amico Ryans discussing the trade that was made, trading away John Mechie.
For you guys tight end. Harrison will come in and compete. That's one thing. You know, he can run well. He competes at the line of scrimmage. So I'm excited to see, you know, what he does here over the next week.
Seeing Harrison, he made some plays versus us when he's with the Browns. He made a big play versus us. So you see a guy, he's very capable of making plays. We're excited to just add him to our roster, let him get in the room. We have a lot of good tight ends in there. We're excited to see him just pop in and compete.
How to get a job one-on-one in the NFL. Just have a couple good games. Because then when someone needs to trade for you, they're like, I remember that guy. Like, are you actually a good football player? Maybe they don't know. But they remember, as D'Amico said there, when he was with the Browns, that he made a couple nice plays. So I like this move. It's really simple. It's really clean. You get a fifth-round pick back out of it. So you control your own fifth-rounder now. You give up a sixth. John Mechie gets a chance to. You know, from the Mechie perspective here, I'm very curious. You have A.J. Brown and you have Devonta Smith, who are the clear 1-2 guys. The Eagles last year traded for Jahan Dotson from the Commanders, who was a first-round pick a handful of years ago. He didn't have a huge role in the offense this year, but you put, you know, Smith and Mechie next to each other again with Jalen Hurts. Like, if I was John Mechie, I would be pretty happy with how this went. Like, you're not going to play in Houston, and now you're probably at least the fourth wide receiver on the Eagles when you look at their depth chart immediately. So yeah, good for him.
I guess. I mean, Philadelphia, ugh, but,
but it's a real last season. I figured you're a Cowboys fan. Yeah, I mean, I know. I understand. Would you want the, are you disappointed the Cowboys didn't trade for him?
No, we're good. We're trying to figure that stuff out, too.
I'm like, who are your wide receivers besides CeeDee Lamb?
George Pickens.
Oh, duh. Yeah, but at some point he's going to punch someone in the face and get in
trouble. I think he's going to be better temperament-wise.
Oh, you think it's a Pittsburgh problem?
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. I mean, Dak is going to be the best quarterback he's ever played with. So
that's true. Low bar. No, that's not discrediting. That's not discrediting Dak. It's more just how bad it was in Pittsburgh for sure. Everything. So it's not hard for Dak Prescott to be the best quarterback he's ever played with. But Dak will be. They're going to be. Cowboys are one of those teams this year, AJ, where could they make the playoffs? Yeah, but could they be really bad too? I think that's still capable of them. I struggle with the Schottenheimer move, man. I can't feel excited for my Cowboys friends, my Cowboy fan friends.
We'll see though. I mean, as long as Dak is healthy. If Dak isn't healthy, then okay. But I mean, they won 7 games still last year.
That's true.
With that, so I mean, they just need to get Mike a deal done. That's all I'm worried about right now.
All right, we'll take our break here. When we get back, there's a bunch of stuff going on that is strange, stupid. What are we doing here? Kind of stories. Another Ohtani controversy that we're going to hit on that we haven't touched on yet that I just have questions about. So we'll get to all of that, and we'll start with Hatgate 2025. That's next.
This is Last Call with Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe George.
All right, so over the weekend, CJ Stroud shows up to this game. He's got a Mariners hat on. People are upset. People are upset that he's wearing a Mariners hat. I have lots of thoughts on this. I'm going to start with a simple one here, okay? If I worked for the Houston Astros or CJ Stroud's PR team, I would tell him this was a dumb idea. Now, I'm not going to be upset about this. I'm going to be honest with you, and I'll explain why. But I would have told him, like, this is, you probably shouldn't do this, okay? Like, they're in the Astros division. They're in a tight playoff race. I heard the Bs say, like, if it was the Athletics, wouldn't matter. No, great point. Valid counter. But I wouldn't suggest getting that upset about this or doing this because it's going to make people upset. There's a lot of times. I think when you work in, like, when what we do in sports talk radio, it's there are certain things you just avoid as much as you can because you don't want to piss people off. And now, he's the quarterback of the Texans. He's not going to be getting booed like Kyle Tucker is right now. But well, maybe, I don't know, because there are people who are really upset about this. So while I would say it's a bad idea for CJ, I don't get the extreme anger, okay? I get why there are people who are upset because he represents Houston, and he's wearing a competitor's hat. And his reasoning is suspect at best. You know, he's talking about swag and but then Nipsey Hussle's coming up, and it's like, what does it really mean? Can you just really not say what it means because it's gang-related? Like what's really going on here? I'm confused. But I would just I would recommend not doing it. But then again, I can't imagine why people are so upset. Like and maybe it's just my perspective. We all have different perspectives in life, right? And I try to avoid – one of my goals with this show was to bring up Chicago as little as humanly possible. Because people complain about me, right? You complain about my Twitter accounts. I'm sorry. But I have to bring this up in this situation here because, like, for Astros fans who are that upset with CJ Stroud and Texans fans who are that upset, what am I supposed to do? Like, I need someone to tell me how I'm supposed to feel. Because my entire life, I have hated with every ounce of my being the Chicago White Sox. And every year when a prospect gets drafted by the Chicago Bulls, like Modest Buzelis recently, because it's owned by the Reinsdorfs, he's thrown out a first pitch in full White Sox gear, right? Caleb Williams chose the Cubs. Like they mix and match. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're a Bull, you go to the White Sox. But like, if you're on the Blackhawks or the Bears, like, You choose one of the other ones. It's your choice. Sometimes it's whatever one invites you first. Like Ben Johnson chose the Cubs. But like, am I supposed to hate these people that go throw out first pitches for the White Sox? Because they're not like they're anti-Cubs in this moment? I just can't. And maybe it's weird because there's two teams in one city, so I have a warped perspective. But I mean, I guess they don't really compete for anything right now. But I don't know. Like I don't know why it's such a big deal. I get why it's a little deal, but I don't get why it's a big deal, AJ.
Right, because I mean, I'm sure there's Texans fans who aren't Astros fans and vice versa. So I mean, it really is just a huge talking point, a bunch of nothing. And CJ even said that, I mean, he's from LA, so he's a Dodgers fan, but he said he loves the Astros too. So I mean, that really should have ended the whole controversy in my opinion.
Yeah. Like now, like what I tell CJ Stroud, like if okay, you wanna be smart here. Fantasyland, Astros Dodgers World Series 2025. Don't wear it Dodgers gear, dude. Like don't
yeah,
do that.
Just
like,
be neutral.
Think back to Jalen Hurts. Remember when Hurts was getting peppered by the Philadelphia media and he had to defend himself? And like, he didn't back down from being an Astros fan.
Right.
Because he's an Astros fan. Like, I think it's now, because this isn't fandom, that's where I do think it's a little different, right? It's if it was fandom, I would almost get it more from CJ and get why people would be upset. But at the same time, like, what are you supposed to do? Like, ask everyone because they live in Houston to give up their fandom for the teams that they rooted for forever. Like you can be annoyed with me. You can be annoyed with Paul. You can be annoyed with Joel. You can be annoyed with, I mean, Granato's been here forever. He's a White Sox fan, or he used to be. Like, you can be annoyed with us, right? Because like, we're not from here. We're talking Houston sports. I get your argument. Okay. And we all care about the Houston sports teams. CJ doesn't have to. So that's why I don't, like, you can't treat them the same way you would want you treat us, I think. So I don't think it's a big deal, to be honest with you. I do get why people are a little upset, but I just kind of chuckled when I saw it, like, pop it off. Like, I saw my buddies from the other place, like, defending CJ, and my gosh, people were very mean. They were meaner to them than they are to me on the text line about this, like, it's okay. Like, he represents, and I think the other thing that's important for me with this is at the end of the day, because we saw, I feel unfair even like bringing this up, but like in the context of it matters. Deshaun Watson obviously was a terrible person. And at the end of the day, what matters the most is the name on the front, not the name on the back. Like that's what matters. Like that's what, I know he's your quarterback right now, but CJ might not be here forever. So what matters the most is it says Texans in Houston on the front, not the player in the back. So if they win for you, it does matter. But we'll see. The fact that I had to get asked about it, I think is hilarious because it's just like, what is going on? And he just kind of chuckled when he answered it and he explained it. But yeah, PR advice, don't do it against CJ. Or go all the way in.
I wonder if the next press conference he has, he's going to like mention something about it just in a joking way.
Don't wear an Astros hat. Because that's pandering too much.
Yeah.
Like that's taking it too far. That's an overcorrection, CJ. Just wear your Texans, gear. Don't wear an Astros hat. But so I wouldn't do it again, I would recommend, but all right, let's get to some of the other weird things that are going on in sports. We hit on the Astros. They're playing right now. If you care, you're watching. We hit on the Texans preseason. We just talked about Hatgate 2025. Let's talk more about the other weird stuff that's happening in sports. AJ is in our college football dynasty league that we're in. BMAC's in it. Josh Beard's in it. Dell, Sean Mapes. It's a lot of fun. A lot of focus right now on who's making the 12-team playoff. Fun conversations being happening off the air. If the Big Ten gets their way, those fun conversations go away. Apparently, the Big Ten, because they can't get their way exactly with the 16-team playoff format, because the Big Ten wants the SEC and the Big Ten to have different amount of automatic qualifiers because the SEC plays less conference games than the Big Ten. So while it's been reported that this is essentially two guys at the bar writing on a napkin, and that's all this really is, it doesn't matter because the Big Ten, anyone that works for that organization, even floating the idea of going to a 24 or 28 team college football playoff format is dumb as a box of rocks. This would feature potentially up to 7 automatic qualifiers for the SEC and Big Ten, 5 for the ACC and the Big 12, 2 group of 6 teams, and 2 at-large bids. No offense, AJ, and to my kooks out there. Does anyone want the 5th team or the 4th team or the 3rd team? Does anyone even really want the 2nd team from the Big 12 to have an automatic spot in the playoffs?
Nah.
And then to go further, do you really need the 7th team in the SEC? Like, this is...
it's overkill.
This is awful. Like stick to 12, please. If I could do anything with college football, I would beg them, please stick to 12 for at least 3 years. 3 years of this new format.
Right, keep it consistent, yeah.
Get a sample size. We had a large sample size with the 4-year program, with the 14 playoff. We had a large sample size with the BCS. And there were flaws. You know, TCU being left off for Ohio State in early on, like the first or second year in the college football playoff. It sucked. It sucked for TCU. You know, think about to the teams that, you know, multiple undefeated teams or multiple one-loss teams that were left out of the BCS national championship. That sucks. Ole Miss and Alabama not making the playoffs this year does not suck.
Right.
Okay? Like, Alabama got rolled by Oklahoma, who was terrible this last year. They do not need to be doing this. You don't need to go to 16. I'm all for 12. I think they should have gone to 8 first. They got to take some baby steps. Like, but give me 3 years of a 12-team playoff with the new seeding that's being put into place for the 2025-2026 calendar year. And then go from there. Also, because I think by the time this happens, I think one of the Big 12 or the ACC won't exist. I'm just going to be honest. I think one of those conferences to me is going to go away. If they're smart, they will merge and a couple teams will leave. So Clemson will go to the SEC or the Big 10. Florida State will move. Miami will try to move. Duke and North Carolina will potentially try to move. But then the rest of the Big 12 and the ACC can just combo. And you can have, while they're clearly the third conference, you can then have 3 pretty well-established conferences. Or just get all of this over with and just go to 2. And just have an AFC and an NFC.
All right, make
and
more
just
even, yeah.
Blow the whole thing up. And have a 56-team college football league with 2 conferences with playoffs that get you to a Super Bowl. Have a Fox League, an ESPN League, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to call it. Like, just do that. That to me is like, if you're going to expand the playoffs this way, then get rid of the junk. Like, get rid of 4 conferences, bring in the schools that can, bring in the schools that can compete. Because there's going to be schools, too, that as you're legally allowed to start paying players that are in these Power 5 conferences that aren't going to be able to hang. Like, how is Northwestern going to pay players? I don't know the answer to that question. How is Stanford? Can Andrew Luck pay them all? Maybe. Like, how is Vanderbilt going to pay their players? How is even like Nebraska? Like, how are these Maryland, Rutgers? Like, how are these low-level programs going to actually pay their players? Mississippi State, like, not everyone's got Tillman and Mattress Mack there. Like Houston's good. Like, they're going to be able to start paying players a lot, and it's going to be, you know, off of revenue and everything. But I think that if they're going to make a radical change, instead of suggesting a 2014 playoff or a 2018 playoff, just blow it all up. Like, just find a way to buy the ACC out of their TV contract and, like, let's just get this thing to where it's all headed, and that is 2 mega conferences at this point. Hugh Dab says on the Twitch, the Aggies finally can make the playoff. That's mean. Accurate, but mean. The Aggies could make it. The Aggies will make the 12-team playoff at some point. I think we'll see the Aggies, and I think they might make it in the next 2 years.
Yeah, I can see that.
I like Marcel Reed. I like Elko, what he's doing. I was impressed with some of his stuff last year. Seems like a good coach. I think the Aggies could be in the playoffs. Are they a real title contender? I don't know. And then, you know, AJ, I think you're Cougs. Not in the next 2 years. But I think Willie Fritz will get him there.
They have a 5-star quarterback coming there next year from Houston area, so maybe
good for
sophomore year. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, sophomore year. Like, that would be like a good goal. Like,
right, 2027.
So that's 2027, so that's what, year 4 of Willie Fritz?
Yeah.
gives them time to build the roster. Mm-hmm. Not the only high-profile recruit they've got. And the Big 12 is winnable. So
it is.
Like, whether it's the 16-team playoff or the 12-team playoff or the 24-team playoff. The only positive with this 2014 playoff is so many people have just laughed it off. Everyone's like, no, no, no. I'm like, no. So this feels to me was floated to Pete Thamel of, let's see how angry this makes people.
Right.
Like, let's, because they, people don't realize that. There are stuff, like specifically in college football, that conferences talk about that they know are bad ideas. And they almost want confirmation bias, where they want the public to be outraged. And the level of outrage will tell them if there is something there that they can work with and dwindle it down, or if they've jumped the shark. And I feel like this is jumping the shark. Honestly, it's not even close. All right, speaking of expansion, realignment, Major League Baseball. Rob Manfred, very honest about the plans for Major League Baseball. In fact, I feel like we're going to see these things he's talked about in the next, you know, 3 years. And then Shohei Ohtani he's in some kind of hot water. We'll get to that next year on Last Call on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to Last Call with Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe George.
All right, final segment of Last Call here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. AJ, last night, Rob Manfred on the ESPN TV broadcast talked about the idea of expansion coming to Major League Baseball and realignment to help with travel. Okay, like that makes some sense, like logistically. For 80%, 90, maybe 95% of the league, there's two teams in particular where I don't really know what you do with the Rangers and the Astros. Do you feel like baseball is ready from your perspective to expand?
I think maybe like in half a decade. Half a decade to 10 years potentially. Not right now, though.
Yeah. Now, the way he said it makes me feel like this is going to coincide with the collective bargaining agreement.
Right. Which makes sense.
Whenever that gets signed, so that could be, you know, cross our fingers going into the 2027 season. I'm prepared for that means going into the 2028 season because 2027 doesn't happen. Baseball is dead anyways, and it doesn't matter. Baseball will not exist. It will be irrelevant. It will not be talked about. Like, even the Astros, like, people will have a really hard time getting back into a sport if they miss an entire season. So, like, that cannot happen. We've seen lockouts. You can overcome it, but it's going to feel like this is selfish, okay? I'm going to fully acknowledge that before I say it. My least favorite radio I've ever done in my life was 2020. It was awful radio. It was pandemic, when is baseball coming back, trash cans, Deshaun Watson. The worst part was constantly trying to figure out when is baseball coming back, when are sports coming back. And if they go into a lockout in 2027, that's the radio we'll be coming to at least – do a little bit. We'll be doing a lot of non-sports stuff. It's actually going to be a lot, like, really freeing and fun. We're talking about whatever we want, basically, during the summer because there won't be baseball going on. But you have to keep an eye on constantly, like, are they going to play baseball this year? If they can get it done, I think then we'll see on the other side of the collective bargaining agreement. Then we'll see the new ownership groups come in. My problem with expansion in baseball is really simple. You have franchises that don't deserve teams. Owners who don't deserve teams. The Tampa Bay Rays, solved. They sold their team. They're going to get a new stadium. All is going to be fixed in Tampa Bay, in theory. A lot of people think they're going to be the team that's going to surprise the world and go out and pay $500 million for that bum Kyle Tucker this offseason. I know that's mean to some people, but he stinks right now. I'm angry. Like, they could bring Kyle Tucker home to Tampa Bay. But you've got this Rockies problem and this Athletics problem. And that's where I'm struggling with the idea of expansion, is clean up your house first, man. Like, before you talk about Vegas or talk about Nashville or Mexico City or Portland or whatever, like, you've got these two bum franchises and the White Sox, frankly, who don't deserve to be really part of this league anymore. I mean, the White Sox biggest contract they've ever given out was $65 million to Andrew Benintendi. That's it.
Wow.
Like, that's the best player they've ever signed in free agency. They've given out internal contracts that are bigger, but through free agency, that's the biggest they've ever given out. Hell, the Cubs, the most money they've ever given out to a player is $187 million in free agency, and that was Jason Hayward in 2015 or whatever it was. Like, you've got all these organizations that are cheap, that don't spend money, that are banking on the Mets and the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Astros to spend money and to go over the collective bargaining agreement, the collective bargaining tax, and to then funnel money back into these poor owners' pockets. So I hate the idea of expansion because it rewards these cheap guys like there is in Colorado and like there isn't in Ocramento, whatever you want to call the Athletics, and maybe Vegas. I don't even think that's feel like – doesn't even feel like it's for sure happening anymore. Like, yeah, clean that up first. So why don't you try to sell those teams first? Force a sale. Force the Rockies to be sold. Force the Athletics to be sold before you start talking expansion. And does it make sense to go to 32? Yeah, it's going to be a huge cash infusion to the sport. Okay. And then there's this realignment question. Everyone's kind of wondering, how far can you go? Do you do four-team divisions if it goes to 32? But they're talking about it being more geographical. And I know BMAC was putting together a potential list, and he was thinking without the expansion because we don't know where the new teams will be. And kind of like as we were talking through it, like if you're not going to go include the Astros as part of the South and go more, you know, up and down, it makes sense for like their division to be include like the Rockies, the A's, the Diamondbacks, and the Rangers. That sucks. Like I get why they're talking about this. Why Rob Manfred makes it feel like it makes sense. But there is something special to me about, again, bias here. The Crosstown Classic for the Cubs and the White Sox, it means something. It's six games a season. The Subway Series, it matters. Mets, Yankees, it's only two times a year. Only two series. And to then just be like, oh, we're going to play all the time. Well then, like, where's the
right, loses value? Yeah.
It loses value. It loses its what it means to the sport. So I get why they're talking about it. In Dodgers, Angels, and think about the Angels. They just swept the Dodgers right this year for the first time ever, 6-0. It doesn't matter if they played six more times,
right?
Because it just ruins all of that. Honestly, the interleague play has kind of ruined a lot of that stuff. So I don't love it. If they do it, we'll get used to it. It's kind of like with like the Astros leaving the Central and going to the American League. It was weird at first. We'll all get used to it. Same thing with college football. We all hate it at first. You get used to it. Maybe the same thing with baseball. But I just don't really enjoy the direction that it's heading in. We'll save the Ohtani stuff for Thursday. Astros are losing 1-0 right now. Only other thing I got of note here, just of interest of what's going on. The Commanders, Terry McLaurin and Brian Robinson, not at the stadium tonight for their last preseason game. Interesting.
Hey, Michael Parsons is on the sideline on Saturday.
Mike is there, but those guys not there. I find that interesting. All right, that will do it for us here on Last Call on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can hit that subscribe button. Join us on YouTube every single day, twitch.tv/ESPN975, as well as the ESPN Houston app. Be sure to be tuned in all week for your chance to win tickets to the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Listener Appreciation Party. Talk to you Thursday. Peace.